The Holy Gospel according to Luke. Glory to you, O Lord. Then Jesus said to the disciples, "There was a rich man who had a manager, and charges were brought to him that this man was squandering his property. So he summoned him and said, 'What is this that I hear about you? Give me an accounting of your management, because you cannot be my manager any longer.' Then the manager said to himself, 'What will I do now that my master is taking the position away from me? I am not strong enough to dig, and I am ashamed to beg. I have decided what to do, so that when I am dismissed as manager, people may welcome me into their homes.' So summoning his master's debtors one by one, he asked the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' He answered, 100 jugs of olive oil. He said to him, 'Take your bill, sit down quickly and make it 50. Then he asked another, 'And how much do you owe?' He replied, 100 containers of wheat. He said to him, 'Take your bill and make it 80. And his master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly, for the children of this age are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than are the children of the light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of dishonest wealth, so that when it is gone, they may welcome you into their eternal homes. Whoever is faithful in a very little is faithful also in much, and whoever is dishonest in a very little is dishonest also in much. If then you have not been faithful with the dishonest wealth, who will entrust to you the true riches? And if you have not been faithful with what belongs to another, who will give you what is your own? No slave can serve two masters, for a slave will either hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. You may be seated. This is a puzzling text for a number of reasons. Most puzzling because Jesus left out a lot of context to help us understand the motives of the shrewd manager's methods. We can assume the Lucan audience was able to understand this by the familiarity of their own customs and their own common business practices. Many of the commentaries I read preparing for this sermon today relied on a lot of speculation and certain assumptions, and normally that bothers me, but without these tools, it is very hard to make heads or tails of what Jesus is telling us. What is clear is that Jesus is presenting us with a dichotomy between what he calls dishonest wealth and true riches. And even more puzzling, he does not ascribe a moral value to dishonest wealth. In and of itself, it is neither good nor evil, but it is a tool by which we may yield to serve one another and produce true riches, which is the end goal. Nonetheless, the dishonest wealth also has the power to corrupt, leading to idolatry and separation from God's new kingdom. True riches are utterly disconnected from earthly wealth. Jesus plainly states that we cannot serve both God and wealth, implying that a life in pursuit of wealth or in inequitable economic practices is idolatry. And shrewdness, though we might mentally associate this quality in a more negative light, is also not an evil thing. Recall in Matthew 11, one of my favorite instructions that Jesus offers to his disciples, he says, "Be shrewd as serpents and gentle as doves." Being in this world but not of it sometimes requires a certain flexibility, navigating cultural values and human law. But I'm going to step back for a second because I don't want to lose you. We've been on a break from the Gospel of Luke for a while, so I want to take a minute to review the themes of this book. Very early on, the identity of Jesus is revealed as the messianic king prophesied to King David to bring God's blessings to the people, not only to the Jews, but to all of the descendants of Adam, which is all of humanity. In the fourth chapter of Luke, Jesus declares his mission. "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me to preach the good news to the poor and to release the prisoners, new sight for the blind and freedom for the oppressed, And the Greek word that Luke uses for release here, that Jesus uses is in this declaration, aphasis, refers to the Hebrew custom of Jubilee, in which all prisoners would be freed, all debts would be canceled, and all slaves released. Thus, Jesus' mission here is a reenactment of God's liberating justice and mercy, and he emphasizes this liberation and this justice is specifically for the poor. And the Hebrew for poor, ani, is a much broader term than the English word that we use for people without a lot of money. Ani refers to people of low social status, people with disabilities, women, children, the elderly, slaves, people deemed ceremonially unclean, like shepherds or sex workers, or people of differing ethnicity. After this declaration, Luke narrates Jesus' journey of healing, visiting, and touching those who meet this criterion of poor. Jesus' actions demonstrate the nature of this new kingdom, which is upside down and backwards, bringing restoration, reversal, and wholeness to those otherwise left behind by the social order. This new kingdom, as he refers to it, a new Israel, invites us, all of us, to this upside-down philosophy wherein God's love leads to a reversal of common value systems. In his Sermon on the Plain in chapter 6, for example, Jesus calls us to love our enemies, to do good to those who hate us, bless those who curse us, pray for those who mistreat us. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. If you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. If you lend to those to whom you expect to receive payment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much again. Instead, love your enemies. Do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. Your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, for he himself is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. And our reading today picks up not too far from where we left off back in July. Jesus is still leading his new Israel, his disciples, on a journey to Jerusalem. And along the journey, he is teaching them through parables more about this upside-down new kingdom. And today, Jesus tells his disciples a survival story about a slave who was just not good at his job. And note that it is subjective, since his master only learns about his ineptitude from an unnamed third party whose motives are unknown. But without any investigation or regard or mercy, the master decides his slave should be fired from his position and cast out from his household without means to support himself. And the slave panics, understandably facing the prospect of being elderly, poor, and without anywhere to go, and decides, by dishonest means, his only play is to ally himself to his master's debtors by clearing away part of their debts in hope that they will help him later on. And this gamble, which could have led to his imprisonment or death, plays out in a strange way because the master admires his trickery, and Jesus commends the slave's dishonesty, using him as a model of faithfulness, which is kind of a head-scratcher. Because it seems that Jesus is recommending theft and dishonesty. But that conclusion inserts a judgment. It assumes that the slave was living in a just world with just laws in a system that could have provided a more honest alternative to his plight. The trouble is, like the Lucan audience, like us today, none of us live in a just world. The laws that God gave to us were for our benefit, were for our well-being, to be life-giving in a cruel and violent world that we may live peaceably together. But the laws governing the life of this slave were none of those things. We today, as in ancient times, are married to this idea that people who end up in bad situations, living on the street or landing in prison, got there because they did something to deserve it, that their misfortune was the consequence of their own bad choices. The word deserve is one of the dumbest in the English language. Anyone who lives within any social and legal system, in order to maintain our sanity, we have to believe on some level that playing by the rules will lead to some sort of reward. If we do certain prescribed things, we will be okay. We may even find prosperity. At the very least, if we follow the rules, we won't end up on the street or in prison. And it never occurs to most of us, unless we have experienced it personally, that simply being bad at one's job could be a death sentence. This slave was a very curious hero for Jesus to imagine. Consider what the slave did not do. Now, the slave did not take his master's money and run away. He did not seek to harm his master or himself. He did not curse God or bemoan the unfairness of it all, or even beg and protest for his master to change his mind and give him another chance. What did he do? He took a chance and made an investment in his neighbors. He trusted in the gratitude of others who, like him, suffered under the weight of unpayable debt. People who were also made subject to an unjust system and had faith that they would sympathize with his fate. Jesus offers no judgment or condemnation for this slave's survival story. Instead, he condemns faith in dishonest wealth. He doesn't offer much of a definition for what this dishonest wealth looks like, so I will invite you to look at the first reading from today for an illustration. In Amos, we heard the condemnation for greed. Hear this, you that trample on the needy and bring ruin to the poor of the land, saying, when will the new moon be over so that we may sell grain and the Sabbath that we may offer wheat for sale? We will make the ephah small and the shekel great and practice deceit with false balances, buying the poor for silver and the needy for a pair of sandals and selling the sweepings of the wheat. The sweepings of the wheat. This is a reference to a charitable act commanded to farmers to leave whatever falls on the ground for the outcasts, widows, and orphans to collect and live on. So this prophet has defined the problem of dishonest wealth very plainly by laying out how the pursuit of excessive wealth will always come at the expense of the poor, and God is not happy about that. Because within these systems, the wealthy become wealthier and the poor become poorer, and inevitably leads to disobedience of God's commandments for charity. If serving God, by extension, is serving our neighbor, and we know it is because Jesus presented himself as the servant God, serving wealth, by extension, is cursing our neighbor. Thus, we cannot serve both God and wealth. This condemned slave of today's story is lifted up as a model of faithfulness, but not piety. Within a system of oppression, his life is worthless. And we must note this point very carefully because Jesus is not prescribing a life of criminality. Instead, he illustrates that the life of this slave is more valuable in this upside-down kingdom of God than the preservation of the system. The slave's shrewd actions are not an effort to elevate himself nor to acquire personal wealth and thus become like his oppressor. What does he do? By dishonest means, he invests in his neighbor's goodwill. His investment is an inversion of the inequitable system which, by default, condemns him and others like him to death on the whim of the wealthy. By his ministry to the poor, the social outcasts of the world, Jesus demonstrates that there is no condemnation for the survival stories of the oppressed or marginalized. Quite the contrary, Jesus has come specifically for them. And in case I have been too subtle, we live in a horrendously inequitable world. By our economic systems, we hold so dear the concerns of the wealthy always take priority over those without. No matter how unjust, no matter how cruel, no matter how absurd. We have very clear, though undeclared, we have a very clear, though undeclared, caste system in our nation. And the lower any one of us ranks in that system, the less say we have over not only our democracy, but our own lives. We've been reading about climate justice, for example, in our book study for these last few weeks. And we've read about our interconnectedness with creation, on our responsibility to care for it, and the reality of the devastating effects of fossil fuels and deforestation, pollution, and fracking, the consequences of which will fall on generations to come. And we are left with this puzzling head scratcher in the face of so much data. Why do ordinary people fight so furiously to deny it? We understand why the wealthy object. It cuts into their profits, which is their true idol. But why everyone else? Adjustments for a greener industrial system would not have extreme effects on our daily lives. Many things, not to mention our health, would actually improve. Solar energy, when these things are relatively cheap. Do not underestimate the problem of dependency or denial. The idolatry of wealth is a very real and very real perverse religion in our world, and people believe in it and trust in it more than any other faith-based practice. There is a trust people have in those who have vast amounts of wealth, that they must know what they are doing, and that their success is our success, and their profits are our profits. But friends, do not be deceived. For as sure as it pleases them, they will cast each and every one of us out. The only liberation from these injustices we have is in the new Israel, the upside-down kingdom of God, where there is healing and mercy and justice for all people. In his Sermon on the Plain in chapter 6, Jesus says, "The good person out of the good treasure of heart produces good, and the evil person out of evil treasure produces evil. For it is out of the abundance of the heart that the mouth speaks." Good treasure, true riches cannot be measured in gold or silver or power, only in service. Only in humility and love for one another do we make true eternal investments. And in service, we take on Christ's mission in the world. Who is like the Lord our God, who sits enthroned on high, but stoops to behold the heavens and the earth? He takes up the weak out of the dust and lifts up the poor from the ashes. He sets them with the princes of his people. Thanks be to God.